Hello and welcome to our latest Charity Digital podcast and a very warm welcome to all of our listeners. My name is Liz from Charity Digital and I'm delighted to be hosting and I'm looking forward to the discussions that we're going to have about how to embrace change in your charity. Today we have the privilege of having insight from digital consultancy Trillium. And in this podcast, we'll attempt to delve deeper into the emotional side of change and explore how charities going through change can get stakeholders on board. Really, the aim of this podcast is to open up discussions among charities that have recently gone through change, and they'll be sharing their experience of what worked and probably, perhaps, what didn't. The pandemic may not be the only source of change in the charity sector, but it certainly has accelerated the pace. Virtually overnight, charities moved their work home, adapted how they developed and delivered their services, and started fundraising online. It's been a big change, but we've embraced it. And with 2022 on the horizon, we need to get ready to deal with even more. In this podcast, I'm joined by Sarah Cousins, Head of Organisational Change at the British Heart Foundation, Greg Edwards, Head of Development at Open Door Charity, and Simon Givens from the Soil Association. As they talked us through how they handle change in the charity sector, Alan Prelestrello, co-founder of Trillium, will also join the conversation to add his insight on how charities can best manage their transformation projects and how they can successfully prioritise people over platform. So, I'm going to welcome our guest speakers, Sarah, Greg, Simon and Alan. Sarah, if it's okay, I'm going to kick off with you with my first question. Could you share your experience with the change that your organisation has been through during your time there? And you may just want to tell us a little bit about any flexible or blended style working approach and the impact of COVID-19. And do you think this matches sort of your experience with the changes that you've had during the years that you've been working with the British Heart Foundation?
Yes, absolutely. Hi, Liz, and thanks for having me here today. Really excited to join the podcast. As you said, COVID-19 really meant that all of us had an enormous change, and all of our office workers kind of transitioned to home working overnight. And that was helped by some of the change projects that we'd already worked on pre-COVID. So I'd worked on a project called Smarter Working, which had helped us all to work in a more agile way. And we all had our laptops, and our technology department had given us Teams. So a lot of that was smoothed over by some of the change that we'd already experienced. But I think clearly, as you all experienced, that kind of change to entirely home working really did make it mean an overnight change for all of our ways of working. And I think one of the things we wanted to do as an organisation, once we kind of got used to COVID, once we'd kind of dealt with some of the immediate concerns, we really wanted to make that a positive change for when we do go back to a more hybrid way of working. So mm-hmm. we have asked our people about what they want to see with a new hybrid way of working in the future, and we have a project going called Flexibly Connected, which is helping us as with that change, and just trying to make sure that we kind of keep some of the learnings from this period of remote working, but also bring back some of the things we've missed, some of that connection with people in person. So that's kind of the we've been working through what that means for our people over the last year, and still kind of looking forward to when we are all back in offices more often, hopefully next year.
Okay, that sounds good, the project that you're working on, Flexibly Connected. Greg, what about you, your experience as a smaller charity? I believe that Open Door has just celebrated its 10-year anniversary. What impact has COVID had? And how has that sort of affected your organisational change as it's been growing over the last 10 years?
Well, yeah, thanks, Liz, and thanks again for having me today. I'm really, really pleased to be involved. No doubt COVID's been a challenging period for the third sector. and you're right, we represent the smaller side of charities. We're a grassroots organisation that's grown quite substantially over the past few years. I think COVID for us in many ways, you know, I can relate to a lot of what Sarah was saying in terms of the remote working side of it, and that posed challenges for us. But we also had an opportunity as well to think about how we engage with our beneficiaries. And prior to COVID, we'd already been developing some approaches using digital technology, digital therapeutic programs. So our Bazaar, a marketplace of the mind program, became really relevant during the COVID period so that we could offer mental health support remotely to our beneficiaries, and staff could still engage with the people that they would usually see face to face. So although COVID was tough, there were definitely some positive opportunities for us. I think in terms of the wider organization, because of the effect the pandemic had on people in society, as a mental health charity, we naturally saw an increase in need and demand for our services. And really, we actually grew throughout the COVID period in order to reach and support more people. And that brought new challenges and new ways of working for us as a staff team. But I guess because we're an organization that's grown from a very small grassroots of two people charity to now 14 members of staff, through the process, we've had to implement change all the way through. You know, one of the big things recently has been around staffing structure, how we position our departments, but also things like our infrastructure, our CRM systems and our functions. And in a way, COVID's kind of accelerated that for us and made that sort of work around change management in general probably more important than ever.
Yes. Thank you. Really good that, Greg. Thank you. So Simon, can I turn to you now? As head of IT at the Soil Association, you do specialise in digital transformation. Could you give us some insights into the Soil Association's investment in technology and how your organisation has embraced it to improve your fundraising?
Yeah, I mean, we've probably been on a sort of 7 or 8 year programme now to invest quite heavily in technology and IT. I think as we went into the beginning of 2020, we were fairly well placed to, you know, to enable our kind of our workers to, you know, be up and running quite quickly. I think the challenges that we faced really were more around, you know, we weren't really prepared for engaging with our supporter base digitally. You know, traditionally, most of our donors and supporters have been either elderly or farmers, people living in kind of rural locations. So the majority of our kind of engagement with them had always been quite a kind of physical activity. And the push, obviously, the obviously push within 2020 to move that to digital platforms was quite challenging, really. So it was fairly twofold, really. I mean, we've made a significant investment over the years in technology to kind of enable us to be a bit more kind of digitally focused. But in some areas, I feel because of the pandemic, that proved to be quite challenging.
Yes. Yeah, I can imagine it has proved to be really challenging. Alan, can I bring you into the discussion and ask you, what is at the heart of your change strategy? Do you have like a solid mantra running throughout that you try to embody?
Thanks, Liz. Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting for us as well. You know, we work across a broad spectrum of clients in sort of the NFP charity sector, and it's been interesting for us to see how different organizations of different sizes and scale and experience have themselves had to adapt and to figure out change. And I think, I guess when we look back on this difficult and challenging time, there will be some positives that we can take out of it. And I think that those positives have been that demonstrating to people that might've been resistant to change, that it is actually possible. And I actually heard something last night at a talk, which I think kind of relevant. And that is, we don't actually fear change. We actually fear loss and the loss that comes out of change. So we kind of need to always focus on what are the benefits of the change. And I think that's one of the things that we kind of had enforced on us, but now we need to look back on that and kind of see it and how this can be used to illustrate to people that change can be used for good and that you build stronger connections with people if you can get through that change and do it successfully. I'm a big fan of mantras, so a lot come to mind. But I think the biggest one that I would use in this sort of sense is that fear of change is its own thing that will hold you back. So as soon as people get over that and start to recognize that change is good and essential, it's a human basic thing that we kind of all have to change, whether we like it or not. When you get over that and you get fully involved in it, then that's where things start to happen. And I think that's why the stakeholder engagement piece that we'll talk about later is really important.
So do you think that the first thing the charities need to do is to get over their fear of change and to just embrace that?
Yes, I think so. I think that being prepared for change also helps. And I think that being prepared requires, at times it requires a strategy, but there are two types of change. There's change you plan for and the change that just happens to you is enforced on you. And so planning for change, as I think Sarah said, a couple of those programs that she's been involved in, I think those are easier to deal with because you can plan and you can adapt and you can create your checklist, must communicate often, must have a plan, must review, all of those things. But I think when change is forced upon you, as we've had in the past year and a half or 2 years, I think then it comes down to having a culture and an internal belief within your business or your organization that you can change. And I think that's been interesting for Simon from the Soil Association. I think with Greg in Open Doors, I think it's a different place, but it's the same thing. It's having that internal belief that you can do it.
Yeah. Does this ring true for you, Greg? What were your primary concerns when you started restructuring?
Absolutely. I mean, so for us, it was kind of, I think it's about keeping people on side, and everything that Alan just said, I completely agree with, to be honest. I think for us, it was around how do we bring the team with us when we go through a period of change. And we did a lot of work around actually engaging with our staff team. But I think for me as well, I think often what can be lost when going through a period of change is what is the reason we're doing this? What is the outcome and what does this mean for the beneficiaries of the organisation? I think that's something that we handled really well in our charity. We made sure that we engaged with our beneficiaries. We made sure that we put in place good, solid reasoning and sort of understanding as to why we were doing this to ultimately help them. So I think for me, not losing sight of the beneficiary group or your different stakeholders within the organisation is so important. And I think quite often we can get lost in process for the sake of process, or oh, we need to do this because it's going to make one part easier. But how does that impact, or how does it affect other parts of the organisation or the people that are benefiting from it?
Yeah. Simon, I mean, you've talked about, the big challenge with your database and everything, but what was sort of about the different audiences that the Soil Association had to consider? How did you manage to bring all of those needs together?
I think that we're a relatively complex organization because we're not just a charity. We also own a business, and I think the business is probably what we're most known for. So I think we had a kind of perfect storm in 2020 of obviously going, kind of into the pandemic, but also the beginning of kind of our exit from, beginning of the end, our exit from the European Union, because our certification business, had a lot of its kind of roots firmly within that. And obviously, the certification business challenges were massive at the beginning of 2020. And obviously we needed to look at that as well. And on top of that, there was a huge amount of growth within the organic business because of the pandemic. So the effect that had on the overall business was massive. So we saw a massive amount of growth there, but obviously the charity then still needed to engage with its audience.
Sarah, can I just sort of ask you a question about the culture at the British Heart Foundation? How did you manage with the change there?
Yes, absolutely. And I think just listening to everyone there, just absolutely a lot of that rings true about the fear of change and bringing the team along. And I think the culture at BHF really helps us because it is a really inclusive culture, and we really involve our staff in what we do, and I think that kind of helps take away some of the fear. So I think for me, just listening to what you were saying there, Alan, I feel like the fear that people might feel about change is is a legitimate emotion, you know, that kind of resistance, if you want to use that word about to change, is really legitimate. So I think what I tend to try and do is not think about it as resistance, but think about it as a kind of legitimate concerns and feedback that we might need to respond to. And the culture at BHF really kind of promotes that. So we have a really kind of strong employee voice. We really listen to our staff, and in all of our change programs and anything we do, really we involve our staff. So we always kind of have change champions, and we involve them from the beginning, and that they kind of help us to take, because we're quite a big charity, you know, all together we've got over 4,000 people, so lots of kind of people to engage across the piece, and that includes our retail arm as well, so people across, you know, working across the country in our shops and stores. So depending on you know, the nature of the change, we can involve people across that whole network and kind of make sure that we're listening to their feedback and using that feedback to really help us to shape our projects or shape you know, in terms of our response to COVID, shape that response. So that, I think for me, the strong culture at BHF around listening, involvement, inclusivity really kind of has helped us, and certainly throughout our COVID response and through our other change projects as well.
What about you, Simon Gregor Allen? What about change in your culture? That's really insightful. Thank you, Sarah. Would you like to add anything else to that?
I think from my point of view, as a charity that's grown, like I said, from such a small organisation to a bigger one, I think we've had to create the culture from the get-go. And I think that's something that, you know, when we reflect back on what we have achieved and what we have done, the characteristics of our people are so integral to what we do and how we achieve what we do. So I suppose over the last couple of years, as we've brought more people in, we've got a greater understanding actually of our people and what they are there to do. I think our sort of core values have been such a key part of our focus when we've gone through periods of change, because it's enabled us to engage with people in the right way, knowing how they want to be engaged with as well. So I think for me, that's been really important as an org. So actually developing processes and procedures around people, human resources, and making sure that people come into the organisation that are the right fit. And that's been really important for us.
I was going to say that I think because of the type of organisation that we are, and because of what our objectives and goals are, we tend to attract people with a lot of passion, people that are very passionate about what we do and what we're trying to achieve. I think we're kind of at a point as an organisation, kind of a small, medium-sized charity that's growing, constantly growing. What we find really difficult to do is apply any kind of process to it. So we've got a lot of passion, but we find process really difficult to adapt to. We're recently trying to kind of mature our procurement process, for instance, around technology. Something I've been trying to do for several years is to have a kind of real focus around, you know, how we sensibly, in a kind of almost in a grown-up kind of way, approach our engagement with our partners and with agencies and around a lot of the work that we do. And that feels quite challenging. It feels quite challenging when a lot of people have kind of gone, well, I know a guy who can do it for us, or I've worked with this organization before and they're pretty good at it, so we'll kind of give them the work. So it's been really difficult to kind of bring people along with that kind of process change, really. I kind of always, always say we don't lack passion, but we do lack process, and it's kind of, we don't want to lose that passion, but what we want to do is kind of, is introduce, a bit more of a process-driven organization to help us kind of grow.
Mm-hmm. So Simon, if you were going to like start the change process again, what advice would you give others that might be struggling with it?
I think not jump to the finish line. I think what we tend to do is, as an organization, is that we know what we want to achieve, and we quite often, you know, go, well, we need to do this, and we need to you know, we need to do X, Y, and Z, and this is the solution that we need. And you know, quite often I say to people, you know, think about what you need to achieve, and think about what success looks like, and don't think about this thing in the middle. Let the experts think about the thing in the middle, and quite often that may be the platform that it needs to be delivered on, maybe the technology that needs to be delivered on, you know, and also quite often it's about not trying to reinvent the wheel. You know, look at other people, look at other organizations, look at our peers, and just think about, you know, about how other organizations have approached change.
Yeah, brilliant. Sarah, what do you think?
Well, I think the thing for me that's probably kind of changed, and I think I've learned even more over the last sort of 18 months, is the idea that we kind of change, we go through this change process and then we're done. And I think, you know, we already knew that wasn't the case. You know, we already lived in a kind of constantly changing environment, even pre-COVID. But I think for me, it's almost kind of sealed that, and we know that we just have to be kind of change agile on an ongoing basis, and I think that impacts on how we kind of help people through that change. Because, you know, as you'll all be aware with your colleagues at the moment, we're all still going through, you know, any kind of change cycle you want to think about, your change curve or your bridges transition model, you'd always, I think in the past we would think about people moving through it, and now I feel that people are either kind of moving backwards and forwards along it, or they might get to the end and then things change again and we kind of have to go round to the start of it again. And I think that's definitely really been brought into relief for me, and I kind of want to be really aware of that difference in people's, you know, people's emotions throughout change. And I think the other thing for me is around, you know, how we kind of experiment through change, so that sort of test and learn approach. And I think that's pertinent to the environment we're in at the moment, and certainly something we're looking at within our Flexibly Connected program, is we don't know if things are going to work. We have to kind of try them out and see if they work. If they don't, we try something else. If they do, we can share that idea around with other people. So it's that kind of experimental mindset within any change that you're going through, to help and helping people navigate through that, and being open to that kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. What about you, Greg? Can you sort of speak about growth in your organisation? Has it sort of brought any operational procedures in that have been painful?
I guess in many ways, the way I reflect on sort of the periods of change that we have been through is kind of, you know, to anyone else going through it, you will be surprised at what you will learn, and where you will come, you know, where you will go to. I think that has been a key learning aspect for me. In terms of growth for us, I mean, there's been so many areas I could talk about in terms of where we have, you know, implemented change and it's gone well. And there's been other areas where it's been more difficult, such as with CRM systems. We took one in, we changed it, and we brought another one in. But for us, it's always been about learning, because we did start as a grassroots startup. For us, it was as a group of people, as a collective. It was about learning on the way, and seeing what we could do to ultimately achieve our beneficiaries' aims and what they needed. Communication, though, for me has been is a key thing I take away from it. Communication with your colleagues, with obviously your wider stakeholders and beneficiaries, and engaging with your people in discussion has been so important to all the periods of change that I've gone through over the last 5.5 years. And I guess really overall, you want to get to a stage where you can reflect back and understand what has gone well and what hasn't, and use that positively for the next step of change, next stage of change that you go through. I think one thing I also speak about is around, you kind of want to get away from that, being in that sort of mindset of firefighting all the time, and actually in a period of a bit of sort of structure and security. So that's what I kind of look at when I look at change, it's how can we improve processes and experiences for everyone as part of the organization, really.
Brilliant. Alan, I'm going to throw the last question out to you, if that's okay. What's the one piece of advice you'd give charities undergoing change? So how might you...
One piece is hard, I think, but...
several pieces.
Yeah, I think it comes to a couple of things that actually have been said, and I think Sarah put it really well, but it's about kind of, you know, if what we see happens, before I answer the question, I'll say, what we see happens quite often is that people recognize the change champions or the change lead will realize that the change is quite hard and it requires investment, both in terms of time and energy and money. And so to make that work, the benefits package that will come out of the change tends to get inflated, which increases the expectation. And so sometimes when you don't then achieve everything that was expected, everyone says, oh, well, last time we tried to change, we failed. So let's not do that again. So we need to ensure that when people go through a change process, they A, recognize, as kind of Greg said, that there are always going to be benefits that you didn't foresee, and that just going through the change is in itself a benefit. And so for me, the one thing would be and they kind of linked is kind of two things, is create a culture of not stopping to change. Because I think as soon as you stop changing and you get into a kind of business as usual mode, it becomes really quite difficult to get back into the mode of going and doing it again, because change fatigue steps in. And linking it back to setting those expectations is try not to set massive milestones with big deliverables and big changes, because when everything's big, the consequences are big. So if you can get into a habit of making things more agile, more iterative, and kind of communicating that we're going to continue changing, and don't be afraid to stretch that change out as long as you can keep up the cadence. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that kind of makes sense. But I think it would be, you know, don't oversell the big objective and the big outcome, and try and get people into the mode of we're going to change, and we're going to change in lots of ways. Mm. And I think that the modern world is just about constant change. We will never go back to a point of staying still.
I think you're right there. Would anyone else like to say anything about what we're talking about, the change here, just before I wrap up? No? Okay, it's been great. Thank you so much. I really, really, really appreciate the time that all of our guest speakers have taken to join us today. And it's been a great session. And I am certain that our listeners have found the experiences shared here to be insightful and to be helpful. And you've got some valuable takeaways there to keep hold of. So thank you once more to our guests, Sarah, Greg, Simon and Alan, for taking time out of your busy schedules and for joining us. Thank you to everyone for listening. You can find more information about digital transformation and change on Trillium and Charity Digital websites, as well as tips on fundraising, social media and much more. You can check out the resources for this podcast in the resource section of our website. And as always, it would be great if you could subscribe to the podcast to whichever provider you are using to listen today and give us your rating. This just helps us to know what you like and also to guide other people to us as well. Thank you once more and see you all again soon.
Cheers, everybody.
Bye. Thanks, Liz.